I'm in a shade. But every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens, and painting. Throw it in the water, they swear the sky's daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore, they all that I'm facing. I'm going 90, mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
And in this book, he discusses the number 333 and how this number relates to this being named Karanzin. Now, Karanzin is seen as the harbinger of the abyss. He is sort of like the being of nothingness. He is the being of non-being. Okay, so it's almost like if there was, you know, he is the line between nothing and something. That's what this being is. And he Crowley actually did a number of rituals to sort of meet with this harbinger of the abyss. In fact, he claimed to have met him in the middle of this desert, and he basically had this like revelation and, you know, experienced all this craziness. Well, this number appears in the death of Oliver Tree. He died exactly 333 weeks after Kobe Bryant died. And there's a ton of other correlations with Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley.
You just heard today's guest who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Izzy N. Griffin. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Back from my antique hiatus, spending my time all over New England, sorting through junk and meeting some very interesting people who may be on the show soon. But until then, I've got a great list of guests. Today's guest is no different. He is one of my favorite reoccurring guests that we have here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. His name is Izzy Griffin, Izzy N. Griffin on YouTube. He's got a channel devoted to his music. He's got a channel devoted to some really fascinating research that he does. And if you want to go a step further, you better sign up for his Patreon, because that's where you get the good stuff, the uncensored stuff that... You know, I'll kind of take it away. But Izzy, welcome back, brother. It's always good to have you on the show.
Thanks, man. Yeah, good to see you. Good to talk to you. I'm excited for this one. It'll be good. Yeah, Patreon's where it's uncensored. It's hot. It's heavy. I'm coming in fast.
Here's the thing. With the type of content you put out, like we were just talking before the air, you have run into situations where certain videos are not just, you know, flagged the way maybe a normal YouTube video might be flagged. You've received essentially cease and desist orders for certain videos, in other words, right?
Yeah. So this is the thing that's like really crazy. You know, I'll be honest, like being a fan of comedy for as long as I was, I really did study the way that different podcasts and different people did their platforming with their content. And I was like taking mental notes from even shows like Come Town, Matt and Shane, all of these different things, because, you know, a lot of the stuff I liked was really silly and uncensored, but certain platforms wouldn't really like push it. Right. And so I kind of took that note, because the way I look at these things is like, I think it's better to have a super quality product that might not have as broad of a reach, but it is really impactful to whoever is listening, right? And that approach and the way I kind of segment things has really been working for me, especially because Patreon to me is kind of this like oasis where certain people don't really know about it, and not everybody is willing to go to the Patreon, which I think is good, because a lot of this content, and as we're going to talk about in this episode, it can really challenge people's ideas of what reality really is. And it can come, I've seen like quote unquote truth or conspiracy stuff, like really like honestly, like ruin people's lives if they like go too crazy with it. And I'm sure you've seen the same thing. And the example I kind of want to talk about is like, I did this video and it was called Into the Arms of Moloch, the Federal Friends of Kurt Cobain. And in this video, I did all of this research going into Kurt Cobain's personal life, where I found out that from his like teenage years, he was surrounded by like feds, like it's really crazy. Like he, like there's the front man for this band called Earth. And, you know, his father worked for whatever, like the Department of Defense. And then, you know, it's all of these really crazy ties to like feds forever with Kurt. And so, you know, I did that video and it was up for quite a while. And the crazy thing is it went super viral on Instagram, the promotional reel I did for it. And one day I get an email and it was super late at night. Right. It was at like midnight. So somebody was peering through this video and I received, you know, there's copyright claims on YouTube. As you know, there's like strikes, there's different kinds of things. I received a DMCA that was not a warning. And it was the DMCA basically said, you need to remove this video because there's a copyrighted photo in this video. And if you don't remove the photo, you will receive a strike and the video will be deleted anyways. So my option was basically delete the video and don't get a strike, or keep it up and you'll get a strike and the video will be deleted either way. I looked into this and basically what somebody did was somebody had a lawyer actually go and contact YouTube that I was using copyrighted material. So here's the thing. Because of the way that I do my content, I never use anything that's copyrighted, because I know exactly like what I said at the beginning of this, platforming certain things will get it taken down and I want that quality to hit every time. And so I peered through this video over and over and over, and it turns out that a screenshot of a Google summary that I included had a part of a copyrighted photo in it. So it wasn't like I used a photo. It wasn't like I used a video. It was a screenshot of a Google summary that had part of a copyrighted photo in it. So, and I've actually have never talked about this part publicly. And what's crazy is I looked into this photo and the photographer, and this photographer has taken photos of Courtney Love, like behind the scenes in tons of at concerts, and they go back. All this lady's catalog is tons of pictures of Courtney Love. So I assume that Courtney Love saw the video, did not like it, and then was like, how can we get this taken down? To take this a step further, I recently made friends with somebody who used to kind of know Frances Bean Cobain, who is Kurt Cobain's daughter, and they were like Instagram friends. This person runs a certain kind of clothing brand, and it's like a girl clothing brand, you know, like girly, like they, you know, whatever. And they had become friends through that. And I guess Frances Bean had saw that the girl had liked the video that I made promoting this reel, and she unfollowed the girl and like stopped talking. Like they're not friends anymore because of this video that I made. My point is that people are absolutely watching and they definitely know, and they are definitely not liking what I'm doing. And my whole thing is if I was a crazy guy on the internet and I wasn't right, and I wasn't making some sort of legitimate claims, they wouldn't care, right? Like wanting this thing silenced adds a whole nother dimension to it that makes it a little more interesting. Sorry, that was like a 3-5 minute diatribe. Sorry.
Well, that's what we're looking for on this show. You know that. But I feel like, you know, checks all the boxes for me as a podcast host. I think it's one of the most ubiquitous, you know, aspects of our culture is music. And so few people really look beneath the surface. I mean, even one or two layers deep, there's issues. You know, you're going much further than that and revealing that it's not just feds, but, you know, programs, maybe things darker than that, but programs, you know, to finish that point, programs designed to manipulate our choices as U.S. citizens, as consumers. You know, if you want to look at the light and fluffy side of it, oh, they just want us to buy Pepsi or buy Coke. But, you know, we both know there's a much darker aspect to psychological manipulation and the networks of people who not only benefit from that, but, you know, have put a lot of money and resources into keeping the systems in place that they've designed to psychologically manipulate us. And music is one of the most convenient ways to do that. So when you start looking around, you dig around a little bit, yeah, you're going to find some strange things according to, you know, what the average person believes. But by now, I mean, all this stuff is commonplace to you, right? I mean, it's par for the course when you go and look in someone's background and they're like, oh shit, you know, this connection here to this person here, to this war here, or this politician here, right? I mean, it's not that difficult to see why once you start making the connections. I mean, would you agree that the psychological manipulation is one of the main imperatives of why we see this kind of shadowy network behind the scenes in the music industry?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm at this part with like this entire journey, and it kind of makes me really sad in a lot of ways because, you know, there's such manipulation going on that people, they become eroded because of it, right? So it's like doing what I do, or, you know, any kind of person who does the things that I do in this kind of way, I truly am like trying to enlighten people as to what the music industry really is, so they understand what they're consuming and what they're taking into their subconscious, right? So here's my whole thing, and I've said this since day one. I don't really care what anyone's prerogative or their thing is. I don't like subversion. That's my whole thing. So it's like the way that like Black Sabbath and Ozzy kind of did their thing, to me, that is not as bad as someone like Jay-Z, right? Ozzy is telling you what Ozzy is. You get it. Okay. Even when you like look into it behind the scenes and it's like, okay, well, Ozzy doesn't really have anything about his past that is weird. But you look into his wife, Sharon, there's this whole thing with her father and all these things, right? So my whole thing is like, if you are just what you are and you're just shooting straight, that's cool. But the music industry has become this monster that has all of these nefarious intentions. And everywhere you look, there is a sleight of hand, someone knows someone, and all these things. And what I've been noticing is it's gotten so deep that now, like you're saying, this stuff is commonplace. Now people don't trust anything for any reason, no matter what. And it's actually become a tool that not only the music industry, but, you know, quote unquote, the occult and all of these kind of nefarious, I don't really know, people, programs, corporations, religions, whatever, they're using that as a tool now, because now nobody knows who to trust or where to look, because everybody thinks everybody's trying to get everybody. And so when someone actually has a good intention, that gets dragged into, you know, that becomes something that people question now, because everybody else, you know, has some sort of weird intent, right? And that's what I'm seeing a lot now. Like, perfect example, there's were you familiar with Joe Fells at all?
No.
Yeah, Joe Fells was a content creator, I guess, right? And he just passed away like last week, right? And he was doing this like off-grid living solar panel, like kind of like this, like off-grid stuff. He was living in a camper, showing people how to make solar, like battery stuff. Really cool, right? And I followed him because of that. I thought that was awesome. Well, turns out he ended up, he started uploading these videos where he was taking these Bibles from the 1800s, and he was like, man, these are rare Bibles, and there's stuff in these Bibles people haven't seen. There's the Apocrypha, there's all these maps. And he was getting his audience really excited about these old ancient books, right? And he was going to start this library. He was going to start uploading all of this stuff.
We to have, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I'm
no, go ahead.
A bell just rung in my head. Is this the same guy that was selling, like, or talking about, maybe not selling, but talking about like these Mexican statues, alien statues?
And yeah,
there are these live streams where he'd be like, check out these alien statues. And there's like a guy who clearly doesn't speak English, kind of like nodding along, like, yep, look, this is from aliens. And he's like, see, this guy agrees. And the guy's like, yeah, see, alien.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. 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 So
guy is now. So what?
Okay.
The Bible. Sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine. So he was amassing this collection of these rare Bibles, right? And they're all from the 1800s. All these things. Now, I followed Joe Fells in the beginning because when I was going through COVID, right, I was trying to build like an off-grid van. Okay, I used to go camping. It's so funny because I say like I'd go camping. I really was just an alcoholic, and I would take this van to like the middle of nowhere, and I would just get drunk and pass out in the back of it. But I was trying to turn it into like a cool thing, right? And so, I followed him like years and years back. Well, he started uploading these quote unquote rare books, and I kind of like, I personally saw through it right away, because a lot of what I talk about is not just, you know, like the music industry and stuff, but I talk about the occult and esoterica. And I research a lot of these old books. I like read parts of them and I quote them and all these things. And I'm looking at these Bibles and I'm like, these are not really rare. They're old, but they're not really that rare. And so the Bible thing with him turned into what you're talking about. He's getting people from Costa Rica who are bringing him these statues that like somehow were able to light up light bulbs that were like attached to, you know, it turned into this thing that to me just seemed kind of very like not, you know, I don't know. It just didn't, it seemed like kind of silly, honestly.
I remember, when he was focusing particularly on the what he was calling alien statues, or some sort of, I don't know, alien relics, maybe was the term he was using, I sent him a DM and was like, let's do a podcast about this. And in typical scammer fashion, you know, he was like, here and there, and that why this is why I can't, right? And it's like, doing this almost 600 episodes, I've reached out to at least a couple hundred people who have turned me down, you know, probably more, right? So I got get a feel for why people might be turning me down. And that, you know, show's not huge. I'm not Joe Rogan, so I get why people are going to turn down the invite. But with him, it felt like, I don't know, there's something else going on here. And it's cheapening the, I guess, authentic research that is available online when this stuff becomes popular. Like you have a guy like Joseph P. Farrell, who's putting out, you know, what we can suppose is maybe authentic to him. He's not doing this just for money. He's writing these books because he's actually an intelligent person who's, you know, curious about these things. And then he may be wrong, he may be right, but he's doing this for authentic purposes, right? This guy, Joe Fells, clearly nothing authentic about him is kind of the gist of what I hear you saying. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, here's what I'll say. Like, I ended up like, so he was going to do this library, right? And the books were going to be scanned and uploaded to the quote unquote Fells library. So he was amassing all of these books, right? And it wasn't just Bibles. So he ends up passing away last week, which is super tragic, unexpected. And I'm like, all these people are saying he was killed because he was going to upload these Bibles, and he was uploading this information that was nowhere on the internet, and it was super rare and all of these things. So I started looking into it, and I broke down. He had videos where he read the titles of every book he had. So I looked into each and every one. Almost all of the Bibles he had were Bibles that were, they're called Douay Rheims Bibles. It's a specific translation from the mid 1500s from the Latin Vulgate. They're a particular kind of Bible, and they mostly print family Bibles. So because they're family Bibles, they have intricate artwork on the insides of them. They have different maps. These Bibles have been the same. They print the same translation. It's all the same. Different, some parts, like maybe the artwork and stuff, might be different from year to year, but they've been printing these since the mid 1500s. Okay. So I'm immediately like, okay, I don't know if it's a situation where Joe didn't know what he had, or if he was kind of trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. That's not fair for me to say. I don't know. But here's what I was able to find. I was able to find every book that he claimed to have had on the internet already fully scanned and uploaded. So that, to me, that was like, I kind of didn't get it. And the thing is like, all these people were like, he was killed, and none of it makes any sense. These Bibles were super rare. But on the other hand, I could like find all of these immediately, right? So he was never able to finish the library. So I compiled a list with all the PDFs. He claimed that one of the Bibles he owned was a quote unquote Bush family Bible, which, like, the Bush family, like, he didn't explicitly say that it was owned by HW or whatever, but he insinuated that. But then when you open the Bible, on the inside of it, it says owner Didymia Edwards. So it's like, that's weird. So what I did was I went and I found Abraham Lincoln's family Bible with the Bible that he was sworn in on at his inauguration, like that scanned and uploaded to the internet. There are Bibles from the 1600s scanned and uploaded to the internet, right? Like, all of these things are readily available and they exist. And so what I'm seeing happen with this, right? Whether or Joe had good intentions or not, I don't know, right? I was able to find everything. I don't know. I have no idea. But here, but my bigger point here is that what's happening is I made a video basically saying, like, hey, this thing with Joe Fels is kind of weird. And I found all the books and I finished the library for him. And what you have is you have people then calling me a shill because I found out that maybe some of the things that he's saying aren't necessarily what they appeared to be. So my point is this has become a greater narrative, and it's actually become a tool for the people who are trying to actually trick people and shroud these things. Because what I then found out with the Joe Fels guy is he had Freemasonic tattoos all over his body. On his back, he had the pillars of Joachim and Boaz. And Joachim and Boaz are the two pillars that, you know, were in front of Solomon's temple. So there's all of these, like, he also had the caduceus, which is the tattoo for Hermes Trismegistus, meaning he basically believed in the Hermetic principles and he understood and knew what they were. He also had a Knights Templar cross tattooed on his side. Now, I've seen people report that there are checkerboards on top of the cross, and that's a Freemason. They weren't checkerboards. They're like Gaelic Celtic braids. So that's a little, that one's kind of a reach. So I'm not really gonna, you know, but it's just all of these things where it's like, okay, Freemasonic tattoos, kind of, I don't believe the relic thing personally, like alien relics, like, what are we doing here? The Bible thing. So there's all of these things that point to either, at the very least, inconsistencies, at the very least. And you have people who, they want the truth. They want, they feel like something is not right. They feel like there's something amiss in reality in and of itself. so many things are being lied about, from the Epstein files to whatever else, right? So people, COVID with Fauci now. And so all these things are going on, and now people feel more lost than they did before because they thought this guy was something that he turns out may have not been, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, a snowball effect, especially when somebody who has, you know, almost a million followers on Instagram, probably more than that across all the platforms. Yeah, it's kind of a strange thing to see someone like that pass away. I don't know that tattoos would necessarily, you know, say that that person was allied. You know, anybody can get a Freemasonic tattoo. It's not like the tattoo artist is going to like ask you if you're actually a part of a lodge. You know, if you pay the right amount of money, I'm sure you could just get that art on your body. But it is strange. It is strange considering all the things.
See, the way that I look at it is it's like if you were to get, you know, a cross, and then if someone asks you a Christian and you're like, whoa, dude, I'm not a Christian. No, it's like, well, then you have a cross tattoo, right? Like, because the Freemasonic tattoos that he had, the Joachim and Boaz are basically the duality of Freemasonry. It's like the dark and the light, you know, the it's a certain level to where it's like you're kind of initiated, in my opinion. Right. Like if he had like the G, you know, the little Freemasonic G with like the little thing, that would be like, hey, okay, maybe. But to me, I see that as a certain level. Same with the Caduceus, where it's like, because there is the Caduceus, which to me, that like shows like, if you know who Hermes Trismegistus is, that's a certain level of initiation, in my opinion. And what furthers this is he has videos where he's talking about he's displaying internal Freemasonic documents, where it's like he has all these little pamphlets from Freemasonry. And then the entire video, he's like, I think these Freemason guys might not be half bad. And he's like, is Freemasonry really that bad? And he's giving these spiels about Freemasonry that are not like, you know, I've been doing this a very long time. I can tell when someone is relaying information they know, and I can tell when they're doing information they're reading, and I can tell when it's information they've just read. He was giving spiels of like he knows what this is. And he's also alluded to and said in the past his father was a Freemason and all of these things. One of the actual orders, I guess, or levels of Freemasonry is you actually offer your children up as a, not necessarily a sacrifice, but you're using your bloodline as sort of an offering to further yourself through society, which is something that's really crazy. Interesting story about that. I met this person who does astrology. She's like a famous astrologer. And I have a friend who we were speaking with, this astrologer, and she was able to like, she asked this person, like, is your grandfather like this certain thing? And she was like, oh yeah. Basically, long story short, she was able to know that this person's like great, great grandfather was like a part of some Freemasonic lodge based on the energy that this person had, because they like do this weird thing where they like sell their soul of their, you know, whatever, their great, great grandson or something. So I don't know. There is some sort of lineage-esque things going on there that I don't know. I think that adds a whole nother level to it.
Yeah. Like a pact you make that your bloodline, your spawn, if you will be, you know, as, you know, allied with this organization as you are.
Yeah,
it's like a sort of family tradition, you know. We're all
family matter.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry,
I was just gonna round out that point about Joe. You know, obviously anytime someone passes away, we don't want to speak ill of them. You know, my respect to their friends and family and all that good stuff. But at the same time, when somebody is promoting this kind of, and again, it's hard to say, but with a lot of this stuff, I don't know particularly what he was looking for in those old family Bibles. Was it, did it have anything to do with Tartaria? Is that kind of what you're?
Well, see, you know, and that's the thing too. I'm not like trying to like disparage this person. I had a conversation with him about solar panels and stuff like years ago. Like he was very nice. I'm not like, you know, my whole thing is just like, I think we need, people need to like be in reality a little bit here. Cause it's like, all of these things are readily available online. It's a tragedy and all this stuff. But like, do we really think that there was some like concerted effort by like the government or by like Freemasons to like get this person? Like, you know, at a certain point, it's kind of like, all right, dude, I don't know. Right. I'm sorry. What was the question again?
Well, I'm just trying to get a clear picture of who this person was so that I could make a sort of, I don't know, point about it and move on. But yeah, it's just interesting to me.
Oh yeah, Tartaria. So I don't know if I think there was some people who were interested in like the maps and the Tartaria stuff, but there was this whole like angle of people that were interested in the fact that the Bibles mentioned Palestine and they called that region Palestine, which that's like what it was called before it was established as Israel. And there's a ton of different, like, you know, disputes over the land and all these things. And it's like, you know, when Christ was alive, it was called Judea and it became a province, right? And before that, it was the land of Canaan and it was the Canaanites. So it's like, you know, the maps change, what people call certain areas change. And people thought that that was like him fighting against Israel. And there's that whole layer of it. But it's like, you know, that stuff is all on the internet as well. And so, you know, it just it gets very convoluted. And the thing that I'm wondering is like, okay, like, let's say he does upload the Bible stuff. Like, what information would be in those that we don't already have? Right. Like, we know about Tartaria. We know about all of these things. We know that there was textbooks from like the early 1900s that say the earth is flat. Like, we already know the, like, I don't really know what it could have added to the conversation that is necessarily different.
Right. And, you know, once you jogged my memory and I thought about seeing his Instagram live where he was, you know, trying to drum up some sort of attention for what were clearly replicas, I would say, you know, and it's just, to me, karma is a powerful thing. And if he was doing something to trick people, I, you know, maybe that had something to do with his quote unquote mysterious death, even if it was mysterious or not, you know, it's hard to say. I don't know the specifics. We don't have to get into the specifics, but anytime somebody passes away who has any sort of notability online, there is a, you know, irrational or rational sort of kind of theorizing that goes on. And oftentimes it spirals into craziness. Sometimes it's well-placed, but with this Joe Fells, maybe it's too early to tell, but with Oliver Tree, immediately when he passed away, people were, you know, coming out of the woodwork with different theories about, you know, how and why and what exactly happened. So maybe we move on and get into that, because I know this kind of hits your personal forte in, you know, that he was a musician and kind of an interesting character to begin with, not exactly like an industry kind of person, right? From what I've heard, he seemed like he was kind of more of an independent player in the music industry.
Yes. Yeah. So funnily enough, these things actually perfectly relate. So it's a perfect segue actually, because when it comes to Oliver Tree's death, there is certain aspects of it that have revealed themselves through like numerology, right? So if you look to different kind of schools of thought within the occult or within esoterica, certain numbers correspond to certain beings or certain deities, right? If we look into particularly like Aleister Crowley, who really is kind of like the father of contemporary quote unquote magic and the occult, because he kind of synthesized a ton of different ideas. He actually had a book called Liber 333, Book 333. And in this book, he discusses the number 333 and how this number relates to this being named Karanzin. Now, Karanzin is seen as the harbinger of the abyss. He is sort of like the being of nothingness. He is the being of non-being. Okay, so it's almost like if there was, you know, he is the line between nothing and something. That's what this being is. And Crowley actually did a number of rituals to sort of meet with this harbinger of the abyss. In fact, he claimed to have met him in the middle of this desert, and he basically had this like revelation and, you know, experienced all this craziness. Well, this number appears in the death of Oliver Tree. He died exactly 333 weeks after Kobe Bryant died. And there's a ton of other correlations with Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley had these rituals in this book he calls the Book of Lies. Now, the Book of Lies in and of itself is a book of nothingness. It is a book that is sort of like almost like the literature equivalent of what Karanzin, this being, would be, right? So to Crowley, essentially, language in and of itself was a lie, because in order to explain the spiritual quote-unquote gnosis or pure knowledge that you attain spiritually, to even put it into words is a lie, because the words cannot possess the actual intricacies and ornateness that a spiritual revelation would have, right? So that's what the Book of Lies is about. And in the Book of Lies, he discusses the ritual of sapphire and the ritual of ruby. If you look to all of the clothes Oliver Tree wears, he's always wearing an iteration of ruby and sapphire. It's always a shade of red or purple and a shade of blue every single time, or there's some combination of it, right? And so I really started looking into this Oliver Tree thing, because I'm like, okay, this number 333 is appearing a ton. There's this strange correlation with Crowley and all of these things. And what I noticed when it comes to the death of Oliver Tree, it was the same exact thing as what was happening with Joe Fells, where the truth almost seems like a lie to certain people. And people are spinning these narratives of whatever they want about these things and these people and these individuals. And none of it is like making sense. It's almost like pure chaos, which is exactly what Karanzin does. Karanzin basically opens false rabbit holes and sends you down it. And then what will happen is you'll be making all of these connections that you think are connecting and that they're a real, you know, it's creating a real map. But really, it's just a web of lies, which is like, that's literally what Karanzin the deity does, because things like language and things like, you know, trying to even logically map these things out, trying to reason these things are not correspondent with the actual like spiritual dimensions that are actually going on. So when it comes to Oliver Tree, what had happened was he was signed to Atlantic Records. And he was having issues with his label, and they really were kind of, you know, at odds. Well, what ends up happening is him and Atlantic work something out where he leaves Atlantic. Okay. Mind you, Oliver Tree is sort of like the prototype of a quote unquote TikTok music star. If you look at Oliver Tree's catalog, if you look at the way he did things, he really revolutionized the sort of contemporary, and it's kind of becoming dated a little bit now, but he was like the guy who figured out like how to get a song in a TikTok reel, like in a reel, you know, it's like a 30-second clip. There's something super entertaining. He's wearing the big costume. And then when I make a video, I'm going to use that song and it becomes a trend and all of these things. Right. So he really kind of started that, revolutionized that. And Atlantic losing him is a huge deal because he really is this massive purveyor for this new component of the music industry, right? We used to have radio, then we had MTV. Now we kind of have this. And, you know, so he leaves this label, he leaves Atlantic, and then immediately after leaving Atlantic Records, he starts talking in coded language about pizza and talking about trafficking. And I went through his catalog. He has a music video with the Island Boys, who are rumored to have been subjected to Epstein and Epstein Island. In fact, there are photos that they might be real, they might not be real. Again, we're talking about, you know, being and non-being, truth and lies. It could be real, could not be real, who knows? But he had the Island Boys play characters in this music video where they're robbing a pizza store. And there's all these allusions to pizza. He had four reels uploaded that were all in Spanish, and they were warning children to not take candy from strangers, and strangers are going to try and take you and their pizza man. It's Mr. Pizza was the character in these videos who was stealing these children. And then it goes so far, it actually follows the story of Mr. Pizza getting arrested and then the courts just letting him off because he's Mr. Pizza and he has pizza friends. Like a full allusion to like what's happening with Pizzagate, human trafficking. And I'm seeing this and I'm like, this dude left Atlantic 2 weeks ago and now he's making videos about Pizzagate. And he's also, he was in South America. He was in South America, literally talking to a South American audience. If you look at the Biden administration, there was 400,000 missing children during the Biden administration, most of which from South America. So we have all of these things kind of coming together. They're all coalescing. He even did something I thought was really interesting where he wore Kiss makeup during his announcement that he left his label. He had face makeup like Gene Simmons. If you look at the manager of Kiss, his name is Doc McGee. Doc McGee was arrested in 1982 for the biggest drug bust at the time in the history of the United States. He was using bands to traffic drugs throughout the world internationally. Motley Crue, and this is like obviously early 80s, so Motley Crue wasn't around. But Doc McGee managed Motley Crue. He managed Kiss. He managed John Bon Jovi. He managed tons of people. He was caught with 40,000 pounds of marijuana, and he was trafficking it from where? From South America. He was trafficking all these drugs through South America. This furthers, we look at Bad Bunny, we look at Venezuela. Bad Bunny, his management team and the people who run his entire organization, they're from, one of them is from the Venezuelan government and used to be a drug dude. So this is like, in my opinion, he's wearing the Kiss makeup to signal parts of what's going on behind the scenes. And this is something I've been saying forever, because you know what? When I was in my band and, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, when we got our management deal, it was with McGee Entertainment. So I looked into all of this stuff at the time and I'm like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking drug dealer. And then suddenly I don't have a management deal anymore. And my band is out because I used to drink and I'd be like, this is fucking bullshit. Whatever. So, I think that he was signaling these things once he was independent and he knew that this was like, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, back in the swing of things, let's pause and take a moment to thank our sponsors. First and foremost, all the amazing people who have signed up to support the show on Patreon. We had people signing up last month. Wow, Was that encouraging for me? Thank you all for sticking with the show, even when I had to take a little step back. You know, these past 2 years, there's a lot of people in my family that have passed away, and it's been really difficult. Just recently, rest in peace to my uncle Eddie, who served the communities of Monroe and Shelton as a mechanic, Jensen's Auto and Tire. It's sad. It's been a tough time. My grandfather passed away too about 2 months ago, and I have no grandparents left. Just one grandmother, no grandfathers left. So it's been tough, but I really appreciate everybody who supported me in this podcast through those tough moments. So big shout out to all of you, and big shout out to our sponsor on today's show, Vibe Med X. To support your health, take She Legit. You're seeing it pop up as an ingredient in all sorts of supplements. More and more, it's combined in these, you know, fancy workout drinks and mushroom drinks. And skip all that and just go straight to the source. She Legit for the win. Stay legit. Feel legit with She Legit. That's vibemedx.com. Take the adaptogen of the gods, the medicine of the gods, as they called it in Asia. She Legit. Too legit to quit with She Legit. That's how I feel. And I use She Legit. I just go to vibemedx.com, VIBEMEDX.com, and I use the promo code CRAZY to save on my order of She Legit. It's sent to me in the mail in a nice little glass container with a little cool little metal spoon. Don't use that for the wrong reasons. And I can't thank Vibe MedX enough for sponsoring the show this long. They're our longest running sponsors. A big shout out to them. And I hope you take care of yourself with the most legit, She Legit, at vibemedx.com. All right, we'll be right back to this show in just a moment. Hey, folks, it's me, the host of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. That's right, Mystic Mark, telling you about meat, brought to you by Omaha Steaks. You've heard of them before, Omaha Steaks. Well, listen up. Omaha Steaks is raising the stakes and upping the quality, because not every steak is good enough to be an Omaha Steak. They're looking for consistency, hand-selected master butchers, okay? And they know what they're doing. They've been doing it for over 100 years. Their 110th anniversary is coming up next year. Yeah, that's right. 5 generations of meat people. These people know meat. And they've got the grass-fed. They've got the triple trim. They've got the Wagyu, okay? Chateaubriand, filet mignon, all right? Listen, if you're eating meat, they're cutting it and they're sending it to you straight to your door. And with the promo code BEEF, you're going to save now with Omaha Steaks. You've heard of them before. They've been around, folks. But little did you know that Omaha Steaks is raising the stakes right here with the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Use the promo code BEEF right now and man up or lady up. And get some beef or chicken, air chilled chicken, delivered straight to your door. Okay? No funny business, no nonsense. Don't ever buy meat off the back of a truck in a parking lot ever again. No, no, no. The real connoisseurs of meat go to Omaha Steak. Use the promo code BEEF at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com. Use the promo code BEEF at checkout. omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF. Well, and with that kind of, you know, signaling, it's like, yeah, clearly he was catching on to something, and that's crazy to think that, you know, and then 333 days away from the other very notable, I mean, relatively much more notable, but still, you know, in this day and age, TikTok is huge. So just the fact that Oliver Tree had, you know, some sort of gambit on TikTok where he could use it to his advantage, you know, it's equivalent in some ways to Kobe Bryant, in the sense that for a music, you know, monopoly, they're going to want to, they covet that kind of thing, that, you know, they're not going to want to let something like that slip through their fingers, at that kind of clout. Right. So yeah, without saying anything, I think the audience can read between the lines as to maybe what was going on there. Now, with all this allusion to Pizzagate, do you think the stuff about Antarctica might have been a distraction, or was that just another one of his pursuits of truth?
I think so. So here is what I think Oliver Tree was. And I think Oliver Tree, he kind of almost, now I don't know if he studied Thelema, I don't really know, but he definitely, there are some people who unknowingly kind of embody occult ideology, and they kind of are almost this like an embodiment of like quote unquote the occult. It's really weird. Like I did a video on Chris Chan recently, and Chris Chan, he just like put out all of these things, and he was like doing like actual quote unquote magic without really knowing it. And so it's like very weird. And I think that's kind of what was going on with Oliver Tree. Either he knew or he didn't know. Regardless, he's embodying this like book of lies, where what he would do is he would say truths in a joking manner. And so it's kind of like the jester's privilege, right? Where it's like the jester can tell the truth to the king because he does it in a funny way, to where the king takes it as a joke, but it's the truth. And maybe the king will come around to, you know, thinking about the thing the jester has said because it's done in a silly way, right? Like Oliver Tree, he went down to Antarctica and he was talking about, you know, the Antarctic wall, and he was talking about tunnels going into the wall and flat earth and all of these things. What I do know is he was on a 7-day cruise. It was not, he said that it was like 365 days in the Arctic. It was a 7-day thing. And he, you know, it's like a silly kind of joke documentary thing. But at the same time, he's saying these things that are illusory to the truth. And I think that that is in a way kind of the genius of Oliver Tree, because if you can say the truth in a way that can get through to millions, if not with Oliver Tree, at the end, Oliver Tree was going to be going on a worldwide tour independently. He would have probably brought in, no joke, over $100 million. He was an international superstar, right? And Atlantic was going to be missing out on all of that money. And that's the other thing that they really don't like, is just like Ye, right, formerly known as Kanye West, he became a billionaire using the industry. Once he left and he lost all of his deals, he lost those Adidas deals and all those things, saying all those anti-Semitic remarks. He did that intentionally to be independent. Oliver Tree was kind of in the same vein. And what really what's happening right now, and this is something I've been talking about for years, and I've alluded to this, the power is going back to the artist. The labels are like almost, you don't really need one anymore, right? You can do everything yourself, and it's artist directly to consumer. And once you're able to figure out a system and a way to do this, it's extremely like you win the game. And that's what Oliver Tree had done, an independent world tour that he's funding himself. Ye does kind of the same thing, right? So yeah, I think it was a bit of both. I think it was, you know, telling the truth through a silly, joking way.
What you got into with Chris Chan is fascinating. So I do want to expand on maybe the idea of how Oliver Tree used that sort of hyper sigil concept to his advantage in his own way, because the Chris Chan way is very warped, I'll say, to keep his surface level. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's almost like these labels are like the old mobsters who would, you know, bully stores into, you know, sending, giving them money for protection. You know, it's like now in this day and age, we have police officers and insurance, and, you know, there's very few places where that kind of thing could even fly. I'm sure it does in some places, but that's what it reminds me of. It's like these labels are thugs, and they're like, oh, you want to be a musician? Slap them around a little bit. Take the money. Here's a few dollars back. Slap them around some more. Like it's just mobster stuff is what it sounds like.
Well, see, and that's like with myself, I feel so blessed because, you know, I love making music, right? A lot of the stuff I've put out over the last few years has just been to kind of let people like remind them I do music. Like I'm a musician. That's what I've always been. Like I'm putting out a project next month, like actual rock music. Like that's what I've always done. I was a frontman in a band. That's what I've been kind of building over the last few years, is like this really amazing rock album that is elements of different genres and all these things, right? And why I say I'm blessed is, you know, my band was really good back in the day. And when we got these kind of like management deals and this attention, I was like 20 years old. I didn't understand what was really going on, right? Like my father was in the music industry, but he walked away because of all of the crazy occult bullshit and all of the things that come with it. I didn't really know these things. And it took me researching the people who are trying to get me into the industry to understand this is criminal activity. This is all like crime. This is all trafficking, drug. Like they would have used my band to run drugs across wherever we're touring. That was the whole point. And so, you know, losing my deal to quote unquote, you know, drug and alcohol problems, which a part of it was really that I probably would have been a problem in saying like, I'm not going to do this because you're trafficking cocaine throughout Illinois or whatever. Right. But it really is a blessing that things didn't work out then, because I probably would have been killed, because like, you know, it's all racketeering. It's like you're saying, it's all a big racket. And I think now, knowing what I know and being able to approach things in a manner in which I understand you can do it all independently, you can do things the right way. You don't have to have weird agendas. You don't have to be a strange fucking weird occultist and all of this weird shit Hollywood does, because, you know, that's what you have to do if you're a part of the club. If you can build your own club outside of the club, you don't have to go in the club. And I think that that is in part what Oliver Tree was starting to do, right? But it's kind of like you said, it's like the mob in this sense of like, you can't really get out, you know, once you're in, and getting out, you know, all the secrets, you can't get out and then start making Instagram reels about Mr. Pizza's coming to get you. Like they're not going to allow that to happen, especially too. Like the label really showed their hand with their involvement in whatever happened with Oliver Tree, because with Oliver Tree, he was allowing people to use his music royalty free. You know, whenever a song is played, you know, a royalty has to be paid to the artist. Well, when the artist is attached to a label, it has to go to the label, then it goes to the artist. And so after Oliver Tree's death, all of that royalty free music, those labels immediately slapped those people with fees, or they removed the music because they're like, we own the music. Oliver's not here anymore.
Well, and that's like the stark reality of it is like they own the music whether you're alive or not, and it benefits them to that you aren't in the picture, unfortunately. And I think when you mentioned the artist formerly known as Kanye West, it is funny because he has this sort of, you know, it's like character suicide as opposed to character assassination. Like he attempted to do something that probably put himself in a lot of danger. So to thwart that danger, he just continued to be more and more controversial on a level that, you know, no big company wanted to work with him. Chase, you know, shut down his bank account at one point, right? So like clearly there was something going on there. And he's a great example of maybe somebody who, yeah, went the umpteenth degree to basically assassinate his own character.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like, I don't know. It's a very interesting and dangerous game. And I just think that, unfortunately for a lot of people, the allure of fame and fortune just kind of blinds them to the realities of like what's going to actually come at the end of the day. It's kind of like if you really think about like, I don't know, like the concept of like selling your soul or making a Faustian bargain. Like, are you familiar with David Lee Roth?
I think I know him by another name. Yeah, I think I do know who that is.
Yeah, so he was like right. The front man of like Van Halen before they got in a big fight and it became Sammy Hagar or whatever, right? Well, with David Lee Roth, he is obviously elderly now. He's probably in his late 70s now. And he is doing these shows now in old age. And he's like kind of strutting around like he's like in his 20s still. And he's like sticking his tongue out and just being like it's 1982 and you're like being this like sexual guy. It's like very weird, right? And it was crazy because I was talking to my dad about it and I was like, this is so weird. Like he's older and it's like really uncomfortable, like what he's doing. And my dad was basically saying like, yeah, that's like this guy made a deal with the devil. Like that's what he is now. There is no real person. Like, the fame and the attention, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it like clouds your idea of what reality is. And now this guy's in his 80s, really, and he's still up there doing what you do when you're 20 years old, 70 years ago. And it's really like, what is that? Like all of the fame, like vanity, just all, it will all fall. Like time moves on. Like it's crazy to see what kind of happens to these people, right? If they're not killed and if they don't die or OD, they just become old and decrepit and they have sold themselves over to this thing that it's just, it's kind of gross. You see it for what it really is. Well, and
it tends to be like the whole monkey paw thing or something along those lines. Maybe not monkey paw, but you know, it's like you get what you give to the world and it comes back to you threefold. So if you're messing around with dark magic, this kind of stuff's just going to come back to you threefold, which maybe takes us to the hyper sigil concept. And I know you were focusing on Chris Chan in that video, but is there any sort of connections to what Oliver Tree did and how he portrayed himself towards the end of his life and the sort of in the beginning of what would have been his independent career? Could you say that was like a hyper sigil in some way by kind of jumping onto a lot of these themes that are popular and internet?
Yeah, I definitely think there's some hyper sigiling going on. For anybody who doesn't know what a hyper sigil is, a sigil is a symbol that represents something, anything, right? Like the LA logo, LA Dodgers, New York symbol, New York Yankees. That's basically a sigil, right? And sigils become charged with whatever sort of, you know, energy is put into them, right? So everybody looking at a LA Dodgers LA is putting energy into it when they are giving it their attention, right? Within the occult, attention is like a currency. And intention, your intentionalities with things sort of orient will. So, you know, if you have a bad intention with a sigil, your will be oriented in a certain way with that sigil. Well, a hyper sigil is a sigil cast into the fourth dimension, which is time. So, you know, a hyper sigil, an example of that would be like a movie. So if I made a movie about my life and what I wanted my life to be, everybody who saw that movie would be charging that hyper sigil with their attention, and my intention with that movie, which would be, you know, let's say the movie is about me becoming a rich and successful billionaire, right? Everybody giving it their attention is charging me up, the creator of it, because that's my intention. And my intention is my will put into this object. Okay. So what people like Oliver Tree were doing is in all of his music videos and in the characters he was playing and portraying, he was often portraying his own death. He did it a lot, like explosions, fire. At the end of the pizza video I was talking about, at the end of it, this is actually very interesting. There's like he ends up dying in the video, right? And then he's dragged and he's put inside of a freezer. And right before they close the freezer, he looks out of like the crack of the freezer and he winks, insinuating he's not dead, which is interesting, right? Because maybe Oliver Tree's not dead. Who knows? But all of these things, you know, speaking these things into existence through a video that is being charged by everybody who views it, that's a hyper sigil. And so, you know, he's embodying these things. And if the helicopter crash did happen as the way we're told and all of these things, absolutely, I think he hyper sigiled that as well as just whatever he is being. You know, like there's other videos where he's dressed up like a pilot. You know, like he was always insinuating. There's another video where he's like walking on stilts and his legs are like 1,000 feet tall and he falls to his death. And then when he falls to his death, it all catches on fire, you know, like sets ablaze. So I definitely think there's something to that. And I think that people, you know, who ignore the realities of that part of not only artistry, but of reality in general, like that stuff is 100% real. Like you look at John Lennon saying, shoot me during one of the recordings of the songs. You look at Biggie Smalls, Ready to Die, Tupac, all these people, like they say they predicted their death, but it might be less of a prediction and more of a
manifestation, if you will.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, like a manifestation. Or even what's even crazier is like there's this concept of, are you familiar with retrocausality?
Eric Wargo on the show to talk about it. He's written a few books about that concept.
Yeah, I think when it comes to things like Oliver Tree and these things, I think that there might even be a retrocausality aspect to it, because a lot of people are pointing. See, people point to the numerology and all of these things as if, oh, well, there's numerology in this, and that means that they orchestrated it and set it up in this way to where, you know, they knew and it was a sacrifice. And it's like that could be the case. Anything could be the case, right? I think it's more of the universe just happening. And I think that time, the way that I understand time is, I don't think that time is a linear thing. I think all of time happened all at once, and it's reverberating in the third dimension right now. So really, Karanzin 333, that is a fifth dimensional being that exists above the third dimension. When you're in the fifth dimension and you look down on the fourth dimension, you see all of the third dimension. And you see all of the fourth dimension time. So you see everything, right? So I think that these events already happened and they're just playing out in the third dimension. And so when you see this numerology that crops up that connects all of these different events, it's more of the event allowing, not really allowing, but really making itself known in the third dimension that it is cascading throughout the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth dimensions.
You know, sort of living sacred geometry. If you focus on the very small details, you will find these mathematical, what a mathematician will call a mathematical anomaly. But when you look around you, I mean, you look at a flower, you look at a seashell, you look at the way a river moves through the earth, like there is sacred geometry and all that. Why wouldn't there be functional living, you know, why wouldn't it be numerically present in other ways too, like in the actions of our life? When you mention like Karanzin, like reaching down into a smaller dimension, it almost seems like what we do with like a trawler ship, where like every single little individual fish that gets, you know, sucked up into a net and turned into fish sauce, like it had its own individual life with a family and its thing going on. And then all of a sudden, like this larger thing that has no concept of just like rips it up and turns it into paste. Like in a fifth dimensional way, maybe that is kind of an analogy where like, yeah, these streams of energy can pull you in a direction that might feel like it's this ascension, but then you get hit, you know, by the grinder and you're done, you know, like it might be something like that. And we're just fish who can't conceptualize something that massive, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And like, you know, the first time that I came onto your show, we discussed my near-death experience where when I was getting sober, my alcoholism was so bad that I actually started going into cardiac arrest due to delirium tremens. So my DTs were so bad, I went into shock, blah, 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 all these things. And what I experienced was like what I would say is like a quote-unquote John the Revelator, like the book of Revelation, type of experience where I experienced everything everywhere all at once. And I've tried to put it into words and I've tried to explain it so many different ways and different times, and it's really unexplainable. And in a way it kind of is that idea that Crowley discussed of like, even trying to put it into words is, I don't think it's a lie, you know, I'm like trying my best, but it is unexplainable. It's inexplainable. And so maybe that is a peering, a subjective, you know, a subjective way to view a higher dimension or whatever. Because what I also experienced was through that experience, it was like I was watching the EMTs work on me from above myself, but then I was like rippling through different timelines. And in each timeline, I was like going to different timelines where I was dying. So like me being worked on by the EMTs, that one would die. I'd hop to the next one. And then a second later, that one would die. And so I was like hopping to all of these different things and seeing all these things. And it's kind of like what we're saying, where in the fourth dimension, you can see every single timeline that could potentially happen in the third dimension. And in the fifth dimension, you can see every timeline from every timeline that could potentially happen, right? So if you are a fifth dimensional being, like an angel or whatever, you can kind of go down into one of the potential timelines and you can start kind of messing with things. And what I think, another example, right? The UFC 250 with the White House card. There's so much numerology. It's crazy, dude. The number 33 is everywhere. And people look at these things from a three-dimensional space, right? They think, well, this guy knocked this guy out with 33 seconds left on the clock and all these things. And it's like, you know, my brother is an MMA fighter. And if there's one thing I know about MMA, that shit's real. Cause I've seen my brother beat somebody's ass and I've seen my brother get his ass beat. Like that shit is super fucking real. Right. So for people to think like, you know, these people train all this time and that they're going to be able to time exactly when a knockout happens or it's fake or whatever, that's like, that's when I start to see, like, we're getting it detached from reality here. What I think, which is actually crazier, is I think these people are doing, these Freemasons or whoever, they're doing these rituals in the third dimension that is going up and it is reverberating into these higher dimensions where these beings exist. And that's where the beings come down and they start orienting and messing with reality in the third dimension. And all of those little, you know, 33s and all of these little numerical things are reverberations of the fifth dimensional being or higher coming down and interacting with our dimension. That's how I see it. Because, you know, if you even, and I just keep using Crowley as an example. Crowley was like he did ritual magic. It was ritual, it was ritualistic. Like if you go to a Catholic mass, that is, there's the incense, there's all of these sensory experiences that are interacting with different elements. Okay. You have the wine, you have the incense. Incense was lit on fire. That's fire. You're lighting the incense, which would actually represent Earth, you have the smoke, which would be air, right? You have holy water. There's water. So there's four of the five elements, which are on what? They're on a pentagram, right? That's how the elements are explained in the occult. Well, a pentagram, if you break it all up, what does it give you? The golden ratio, right? So if you go, there's that Donald Duck animation where Donald Duck is dressed like a Pythagorean and he's explaining the pentagram, right? People are like, oh, it's something evil or whatever. He's explaining sacred geometry. He's explaining the golden ratio. So you were saying the flower, the seashell, that's all mathematical. That is a reflection of the pentagram, burning incense, all of these things. These are all interactions. We see it as burning something. We're burning incense. We're doing this thing that is interacting with higher dimensional beings, and they're interacting with everything all at once. That's what spiritual warfare is, right? So when a third dimensional being is trying to interact with a higher dimensional being, good or bad, right? That's how it is done. It is done through ritual magic and all these things. And then you end up getting whatever you end up getting with whatever your intention is based on your will, the orientation of one's will to affect reality. That's magic.
Yeah. And, you know, in a way, tying that back into retro causality, like maybe each decision you make jumps you into a different, you know, timeline that's just close enough to where, you know, the people around you are the same relatively, right? And there's these sort of gradual changes. And when big changes happen to a person, maybe it's less gradual. But for the most part, I wonder, like, yeah, if you really start manipulating with that sort of timeline thing, maybe it does end poorly because you get yourself wrapped up in the lifespan of some greater entity that sees you the way we would see a mosquito. You know, the mosquito comes and takes some sustenance from us, and maybe it sticks around too long, get slapped along the side of your skin, you know, and now it's dead. You know, what's good in that meal if it, you know, kills you in a few more seconds, right? So I wonder to what effect messing around with the occult can lead to situations like that. When it comes to Oliver Tree, getting back to him for a moment, there was one aspect to his mysterious death, we'll call it, because it could be that he's still alive, but is this whole trip to Antarctica, which I don't know if there's any truth in that. Apparently there was a video of him there or close to Antarctica. And you and I both know that that's something that not just anybody can go and take a trip down to Antarctica. So what do you think's going on there? And do you think that has anything to do with his disappearance?
Yeah. So the Antarctica thing, so he filmed like a documentary. It was like everything he did. It was a real fake documentary where he claimed he was in Antarctica for 365 days documenting these things. Really, he was on a cruise for 7 days. He was on a cruise for a week and he filmed it, you know, like he's studying and he was like sampling the glaciers and the water and, you know, taking these microphones and doing all this kind of silly stuff. You know, I don't know. I think it's kind of like I stated, he's saying truths in a funny way to where he could kind of get away with it. You know, even like the Mr. Pizza videos, he kind of did the same thing. He made it silly and kind of pseudo artistic, you know? So, I don't know. It's hard to say. I personally tend to think of deaths and disappearances and things like that more in the vein of it's business. I honestly, I don't really think like, the whoever they really give a shit about, like, okay, let's say Oliver Tree is like, man, Antarctica, blah, blah, blah. And let's say he has some super convincing videos and all these other things. Like, how many people are going to believe it? Two, how many people actually care? And three, like, you know, like it's so easy, just like we're saying with all of this, to just say that guy's crazy. Right. People did it to me for a long time. That's why I sourced everything I said. And after years, finally, people are like, OK, there might be something to this. Right. So So I don't know if his death, I would think it's more in the realm of this guy is going to show the world that you can do music independently outside of the system. And that is the problem. And to bring it back to Joe Fells, I don't think the Bible thing, and I don't think the relic thing, that stuff is whatever, like kaputs. But when it comes to him talking about solar and off-grid living, if something strange with his death happened, it's that, right? They don't want people to be independent. They don't like rugged individualism, and they don't like humans to express their vitality, right? Look at the conversations that are being had, even politically, right? If we look at the subconscious mind and reality is just a reflection of the subconscious mind, politics is sort of like, you know, the systemic organization of the subconscious, right? Even the political conversations, the government's either going to come and save you, it's going to give you a handout, or, you know, the government's going to make you safe. Oh, the illegals, we're going to get the illegals out and then you'll be safe. Or, oh, give us your freedoms and the flat cameras will make you safe. Or, oh, you don't need a job, the government will give you money, then you'll be safe, right? It's all of these things of collectivism and reliance on something greater, right? And if we look at that in an occult realm, it's the same thing with like Qurans and doing rituals to have reliance on something greater, right? Really, they don't want people to figure out that they don't need anyone but themselves. And frankly, Jesus Christ and God. If you have a connection to God and you can really figure that out, you'll be self-sustainable. A lot of like my whole... What I personally tried to do is to show people you can overcome anything through God and through Christ personally. Like I overcame addiction. I became my own boss. All of these things by working my ass off and by just dedicating my life to the truth, which is the truth is the way that we interact with God, right? And so that's what I think in terms of Oliver Tree is showing people they rugged individualism, working really hard. You don't need any sort of system above you. No. And that's where I think he got into trouble.
And yeah, Joe Fells too. I mean, who knows? Maybe he was just getting in all that alien relic stuff to take the heat off of the other things that were threatening the system. Cause yeah, it's something that I don't wish on anybody. You know, you don't want to be thrown out of a helicopter or, you know, set up to be killed in a helicopter. It sounds like an awful way to go. So yeah, it's a shame. And I wonder, you know, what's it going to take for these music labels to finally die out? I mean, do you think they can evolve and transform and exist in the next, you know, century to come? Or do you think they're going to be a relic of the 20th century?
You know, I think, here's the thing. I think that there will be people who figure it out, and those people will be able to do it independently, right? But what I think that they're going to do, so like if we think about the history of music, right? Like there's always the big star, Elvis, Michael Jackson, you know, even like, yay, Kanye West. There's these big monolithic figures that are a reflection of where culture is at that time, right? So when we had radio, we had a monoculture. Everybody listened to the radio. When we had MTV, we had a monoculture. Everybody watched the music videos, right? And if we look at the stars throughout time, they correlate with that. Elvis and radio, Michael Jackson, and radio into kind of music television, right? Even if we look into kind of the internet age, it was a monoculture as well, right? Like if you went on Facebook, not necessarily Facebook, but like if you look at like the 2016 internet, everybody kind of saw the same things, right? And that is like a reflection of Drake. Drake was a product of monoculture. Everybody was listening to Drake. Everybody listened to MJ. Everybody listened to Elvis. What we're having now, and personally, I think the Drake Kendrick beef was an aspect of this. Is culture is moving from being a monoculture into one of quote unquote hyper locality, where the algorithms are now perfectly synchronized to you. You know, my algorithm is completely different than yours, and everybody's algorithm is actually a perfect reflection of their own subconscious mind. So now we don't have these monolithic figures as much anymore. There's not like one massive figure that everybody listens to. There might be one or two that a lot of people listen to, but it's not like Michael Jackson. It's not like Elvis. And what I think that the music industry is figuring out, and as somebody who's been studying this ad nauseum for when I come out with my like rock album next month, is this hyperlocality is something that the music industry is going to have to adjust to, because now I might listen to 10, 20 different bands that somebody's never even heard of. Right. So what I think that they're going to do is, instead of producing bowling balls, they're going to start producing bullets. And what I mean by that is they might have a catalog of 1,000 artists that they all give $100,000 to, rather than having, you know, one superstar they give $100 million. You know what I mean? And I think in that way, the music industry will have to evolve. But here's the thing, with that hyperlocality, what ends up happening is, a band can, they don't need a label, because if they make whatever $50,000 a year, they can flip that and they can do everything themselves. You can go and get your own vinyls pressed. You can go and get your own CDs made. You can get your own t-shirts printed and everything else. Why would I need a label at that point? I can do everything myself. And so what happens is they will rely on people who don't know better, or who are like lazy, and people who just want to be famous. Right, which will lead to the degradation of music in general. So that's what I see happening right now. And, you know, I just think, like, with the way the internet and reality is moving, people are not susceptible to subversion anymore. Everybody's on the lookout of the subversive nature of the music industry and people in general. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I think the music industry is going to have a hard time surviving past this whole conversation we're having right now. This will really become sort of like reflective in like 5 to 10 years. But I don't know how it will survive. It will find a way. It will figure some evil system out. Maybe they just start, you know, making it to where if you're not signed to a label, you can't do live shows and you can't sell tickets, or they might have some weird freaky workaround, but it's going to get really interesting. Like, truly.
Yeah. I mean, we're already seeing, as we talked about in the beginning of our conversation before we started recording, where AI is affecting people in this space, content creation. You had YouTube using AI to demonetize like something like, you know, 50,000 channels all at once, some big number. But yeah, I wonder how that'll affect the music industry. We've probably talked about that plenty of times on the show before. I used AI music occasionally with this podcast, and the past year I really decided to move away from AI altogether. Maybe it doesn't save me as much time as I could be saving, yada yada, but I don't know. There's something about it that just feels like it's gonna dissolve into nothing, and people are gonna be left, you know, holding the empty basket again, so to speak.
Yeah, I really think that AI is, I personally, I don't think that it is as sophisticated as people think. I don't think it's like, it constantly gets things wrong. Like, part of the reason I don't use it is like, I've actually showcased this. I did a video on Henry Rollins, and I was like asking it, like, what's Henry Rollins's name? And it was like, Henry Rollins's name is Henry Rollins. And it's like, that's not his real name. Like, I know I'm literally looking at the guy's real name. It's not, you know, so. And I said this with my David Grohl research, like, Dave Grohl and certain individuals who might not be the best people in terms of their behavior. Like, you know, Dave Grohl has a kid out of wedlock and he's cheating on everybody and he possibly had a hand in killing Kurt Cobain, all these things. They're paying for PR, and then the AI is just recycling that PR nonsense. And I think AI is like a sophisticated search engine and like really nothing more, because like, even with AI art, it's super obvious when someone uses it. With AI music, it's super obvious when it's like I don't know. I really think that it's like you're saying, people are going to be stuck like holding the bag.
Yeah. Well, and you know, digital life, I think, is becoming more and more alienating, and that hyper locality that you just described is probably driving factor with that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like, I think when everybody kind of saw the same things, there was a sort of connectedness that it brought about, you know, like, remember, like when everybody was playing Pokemon Go, you know, like everybody was like kind of having the same conversations. And I think that, you know, that's good and bad in its own way. But yeah, there is a certain kind of isolationism that the internet and digital life brings that it can get super lonely.
Yeah.
You know,
hence why I've been spending a lot less time on the digital, in the digital world, so to speak, a lot more time in the real. And yeah, I don't know. Not that I am going to stop podcasting by any means, but I hope the podcast is something that people, you know, they take inspiration from and aren't just sitting around listening to podcasts all the time. But here we are, Izzy podcast.
Yeah.
No, I'm very grateful that you came on to explain all this stuff. And when it comes to what you've been working on, it's clear that that hard work is present in everything you do. Just as someone who's been a fan of your research for quite some time now, I've definitely seen the steady incline, and I'm very again happy to see it. So is there anything in particular that you're working on this summer, anything that you're working on moving forward in the next year? You have this rock album you've been talking about. Is there anything you can say about it? Like,
yeah. So, I'll be super honest. So like musically, music is the one thing for me that like I'm really sensitive about, right? So like in the past I did these kind of like pseudo hip hop projects, and I really released those so people knew I did music, and I was kind of trying to figure out how to go about doing music today, because it's so different, right? Like I was in a band, like I've talked about, and it was just like it was really hard dealing with personalities and scheduling and all these things. And I just like, I after that band didn't work out, I started another band and it became the same thing, right? Like the drummer wanted to be the front man, but I was the front man. And then the bass player wanted to be this certain thing. And then we got a new bass player and he was a literal gay furry who was on an episode of My Strange Addiction, whose best friend, I'm not even joking, dude, was having sex with inflatable pool toys. I am not joking. That is a true story. That is true. So like the band thing, it was just like, I want to do rock, but like these people are crazy. And so, you know, I just was really trying to figure out how to do it. And so I figured out a way. I like basically just hired studio musicians and figured out a way to kind of do it. And so yeah, it is rock, but it's really like, I'm going to be honest, it's really good, dude. Like I impressed myself with it, which I'm really excited about. So it's not like, you know, 70s like Led Zeppelin rock. It's very different, and it's very, very like I said, like I'm sensitive about music, I'm super honest with it. It's really, really good. I think it's gonna blow a lot of people away, because also the way I view music is like, if you're gonna just make something that someone else can make, I don't really see a point in that. So doing something that's truly transformative was like something I've really been working on for a long time, and you know, I want to do something that exists in spite of the music industry, right? Like, I want to do something truly independent where I am funding the merchandising, I'm funding the vinyl, I'm doing my own shows and my own tours outside of anything, and nobody can have a hand in anything I'm doing. I'm not pushing any subversive things. It's just 100% me and my storytelling and the people involved. And I think that that is something that the world needs in the music space, you know? So I guess that's what I could say, but it comes out on 9/11/2026. It's called Air, H-E-I-R. Strangely enough, 9/11 is like my parents' anniversary, which is kind of interesting. So they got married in like the mid 90s. So kind of like an homage to my parents and a lot of different things, you know, pushing good stuff, family, God, you know.
Cool.
I'm excited for
that's
it.
That's awesome. So. I am excited as well. Based on how you described it, there's a lot to be excited about. And as a fan of new music, yeah, I'm happy to support it and share it with the audience. So please send me some links when it is available. I'll be posting about it. But yeah, thanks again, Izzy. Appreciate you joining me on the show, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. This is really fun.
Else to say other than I look forward to listening to Heir, spelled H-E-I-R, like heir to the throne. Very cool.
Yeah, dude, we don't have any more rock stars. We need to bring it back. Like actual cool rock and roll, like cool, you know? We have all this hip hop. We need some coolness back.
Yeah, I agree. I far too often am listening to songs that were made before I was born. So yeah, it would be cool to hear that. So right on. Thank you, Izzy. Thank you to all tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. And there it is, folks. That was our conversation. One of five conversations that I've had with Izzy Griffin here on the show. Go and look up his name. You'll find four other interviews with him on the show. And he's also got his own Patreon and YouTube channel where he posts all kinds of fascinating content. So go follow him and stay tuned for more from me in the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. I've got a new guest coming out very soon, and excited about that one. So stick around, and we'll be back very shortly this month in August. So thank you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.